Heard the call to build your small business? Make it happen with a .net domain name, the place for dreamers for 30 years and counting. Visit keepdreamingup.net for tips and advice, whether you're just getting started or looking to grow. That's keepdreamingup.net.
You are Locked On Clippers, your daily Los Angeles Clippers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey everyone, welcome to a new episode of Locked On Clippers Podcast. I'm your host, Lucas Hand. Today is Thursday, February 2nd, 2017. It is our second to last episode of the week. We're here with new episodes every Monday through Friday, talking Clippers and all things about them. So, we'll start off with the Clippers win last night against the Phoenix Suns. It was a little bit of a funky game, I thought. Wasn't necessarily the best or most intense game that we've seen this season. Even from the beginning, it just felt like the teams were both a little lackluster. There wasn't a ton of energy in the game that you might normally look for. And because of that, the game kind of had a weird mood throughout. Even with the Clippers being successful and winning and the Suns making, you know, a late push, and it could have been dramatic, and it almost was anticlimactic even when the Suns cut it within 1 point in the fourth quarter. It was weird. There wasn't a whole ton of energy there. You might be able to just chalk it up to the Suns team being pretty bad and them playing, you know, at home, and maybe the crowd isn't great. You know, nothing against Suns fans, but when a team is 15-34, sometimes the crowd isn't always going to be great at those home games. So maybe it was just that. Maybe it was just a weird energy in the arena. I know it was kind of an unusual start time. It started at 9 o'clock here in New York, 6 o'clock in L.A. Phoenix, I think, it would have been at 7 right now because of daylight savings time. But still, 7 o'clock is kind of a little bit of an early start time. Normally, you'd look for 7:30. But let's get into actually what happened during the game. And I think the star of the show that you have to talk about is Blake Griffin. Blake Griffin had 29 points on 10 of 14 shooting. He got to the line 10 times and made 9 of them. He had 8 rebounds and 5 assists. He was the catalyst for pretty much everything the Clippers did all night, from their early start, where he had, I believe, 13 points in the first quarter, even late in the game, where he didn't have a huge role, but he had a couple timely buckets, and he had one really notable possession where he was double-teamed. He found Raymond Felton on a cross-court kick-out pass for the assist for a three, and that was kind of that. I mean, as much as there can be a dagger in a game that didn't really have a ton of momentum going in it, that seemed to be the dagger. DeAndre Jordan was actually ejected from this game after 22 minutes. He had 6 points, 12 rebounds, and 4 blocks in his 22 minutes, and then he was ejected with a flagrant 2 foul. I thought it was iffy, the flagrant 2. It was definitely a hard foul, and it was definitely a flagrant. But I think maybe the way that I differentiate between the two levels, and I know that there are some minor technical differences in the rules, but a lot of it is ambiguous and intentionally left ambiguous so the referees can decide. The way that I sort of judge it is something that's dangerous is a flagrant 1. Something that's dangerous and dirty is a flagrant 2. And what I mean by that is DeAndre Jordan made a dangerous play. He put an opponent, another player, at risk with the play that he made. But there was nothing malintentioned about it. He wasn't trying to hurt anybody. He just made a dangerous play. And sometimes in the course of basketball or in the course of any sport, you make dangerous play. You see, in football, players get injured on kickoff returns all the time. It's the most dangerous play in football is the kickoff and the punt return. You don't have to be trying to hurt someone for something to be inherently dangerous. Someone's more likely to get hurt driving to the rim than shooting a three-pointer. Some things are more dangerous than others. And DeAndre Jordan leaping into action, trying to make a late play on help side defense, is a more dangerous play than if he's in good position. And I don't think it's necessarily wrong for the league, both from an aspect of protecting their assets. You know, you've got young players who could potentially be worth hundreds of millions in revenue to the NBA down the line. You're protecting your assets, and you're just protecting player health, because the rules of the league are dictated by both the players and the ownership groups. So I don't think it's out of line to say, okay, this might be a perfectly reasonable basketball play, but it's still dangerous. So you train guys to either be in better defensive positioning, or if you're going to be that late, you let him go. And I know that that might not be a super popular sentiment, especially among like old-fashioned guys who like seeing guys get laid out a little bit sometimes. But I think on a play like that, where DeAndre Jordan comes over, I don't think his intention was to lay the guy out like that. But it was a dangerous play, and Marquese Chris very easily could have gotten hurt. So I get giving the flagrant. I just don't know about the flagrant too, because I feel like there definitely wasn't any sort of dirtiness or malintent there. It was just a reckless play. Now, and you know, then there was the other flagrant called later in the game where Tyson Chandler kind of shoved Blake Griffin in the back, and it's hard to know what exactly is what sometimes, where Chandler, it's funny, so Chandler swipes with his right arm to try to get the ball. So he's not, you know, this isn't a Jason Smith situation where he's just trying to be the strong safety hitting the wide receiver going over the middle, right? We saw Jason Smith do that to Blake Griffin in New Orleans a few years ago. This isn't that. He's swiping to try to get the ball. He ends up hitting Blake Griffin in the groin, which is painful. And then as Blake goes past, Tyson shoves him with his left hand, kind of pushing him towards the baseline. But it's important to note that Blake was already running full speed at the basket when he was pushed in the back. So, yeah, when you're moving at full speed and you're about to jump in the air, a push is really dangerous. At the same time, we don't know how much of his momentum really came from that push. We know that it mattered, because he doesn't go into the third row if there's no push. He doesn't do that completely under his own power. But we don't know how much. So I think the flagrant one was fair in that situation also, because, again, I don't think Tyson Chandler is out to make a Bush League play and shove a star in the back and try to injure Blake Griffin. But you have to think, you have an athlete, a guy who's worth hundreds of millions of dollars to the NBA, going at breakneck speed, jumping into the air. You can't just be shoving him in the back. And it was, again, you tell me it was totally accidental, I'm with you 100%. I don't think Tyson Chandler is trying to do anything there, just like I don't think DeAndre Jordan was trying to do anything on the other play. But I think flagrant one's the right call. I think there has to be a little something extra on top of a normal foul to discourage those kinds of plays. That's how you evolve the game. It's like in football. How do they stop quarterbacks from taking helmet-to-helmet hits? They give 15 yards and a first down when you do it. And the defenders, even though that might be how they were taught to play football, you're teaching them to play football differently because you're providing an extra disincentive for those actions. You could have grown up watching basketball, watching the Bad Boy Pistons, you know, watching fights every other game, whatever it is. But if you're in the NBA and your paycheck depends upon staying on the floor, and staying on the floor all of a sudden depends upon not making those dangerous plays, you're going to learn how to play basketball the way the NBA wants you to play it. So I'm fine with those calls. I thought the DJ one didn't have to be a flagrant two, but it can be hard to separate, I think, sometimes for the officials, the foul versus the landing. Marquise Chris had a brutal landing. Fortunately, he was okay, but he hit hard. There was nothing pleasant about that landing. And then Blake, I mentioned that Tyson Chandler kind of got Blake in the groin right before he shoved him in the back, just accidentally. But then when Blake gets up, he's kind of grimacing and he's crouched down, and it looks like, oh, maybe he hurt himself being pushed into the third row of the stands. And really, he's just trying to catch his breath from, you know, getting hit in the crotch, which we didn't know that at the time. You know, we're all worried that he's hurt, and the officials maybe watching it are thinking that, you know, a star player was just injured because of this push. And really, it's something kind of unrelated. So that's my two bits. I don't mind, especially in regular season games, I don't mind the officials being extra strict. If I was sitting there with the headset on, I would have said flagrant one, flagrant one. They said flagrant two, flagrant one. Okay, I disagree with it, but I'm fine with them being extra strict during regular season games. I think it's important that they use these tools, the flagrant fouls, to keep teaching players to play the game more safely. To teach, you know, it's going to be better for teams, better for fans, and better for players in the long run when a guy like Marquise Chris doesn't have to take as many of those hits like he took tonight, because players are a little more hesitant because DeAndre knows that he got thrown out of the last game for doing that. So next time, maybe he lets Marquise Chris have that dunk. And the fans get a highlight, and the NBA gets to tweet it out, and Marquise Chris has one less hit on his bones going forward in his career, so that the fans get to see him in more games, and he gets to cash more checks, and the NBA gets to put him on TV more often. It's better for everyone. That doesn't mean you want to make the NBA completely not a physical game, but I think it's important to let the game, not to let the game evolve, but to force the game to evolve in certain ways. I want to talk about Eric Bledsoe, because I love Eric Bledsoe. Eric Bledsoe had 41 points tonight, 13 of 22 from the field, 8 assists, 4 rebounds. This is his third game with 40 points in the Suns' last 6. Devin Booker had 20 points. This is his 14th game with 20 or more points in a row. The last time he didn't score 20 points was the Suns' last loss against the Clippers. But Booker was 7 of 19 from the field tonight, so he didn't have that great of a game. But Bledsoe, 41 points on 22 shots. 3 games in the last 6 with 40 points. If I didn't know any better, I would say that Eric Bledsoe is trying to play so damn well before the trade deadline that some team is going to come around and make the Suns an offer that they can't refuse. I love Bledsoe. I hope the Suns trade him. And I don't even, it's not that I dislike the Suns, and, you know, I'm not saying, oh, he's never going to succeed there, or saying that the Suns don't deserve him, nothing like that. I just think that the direction of this Phoenix franchise going forward around Booker, Chris, Warren, Dragon Bender, these guys are all like 19 and 20. I think Warren's the oldest of that bunch that I just listed at 22. These guys are the future of the team. Eric Bledsoe is their best player, but he's not their most important player. Devin Booker and Dragan Bender are probably their two most important players. I don't know where Marquise Chris quite fits into that plan yet, but Devin Booker and Dragan Bender are their two most important players, and I'm all for an exciting young Phoenix Suns team. You know, maybe be the they're going to get another good draft pick this year. Let him be the next Minnesota Timberwolves. That's awesome. But I don't want to have to watch one of my favorite players in Eric Bledsoe be on the Phoenix Suns as they're trying to be the next Minnesota Timberwolves. And, you know, the Timberwolves, I think, might I never thought the Timberwolves were going to make the playoffs this year. I thought they had a chance to push for the 8th seed next year. And then they should definitely be a playoff team by the year after that. I'm a little patient with the young guys that have gotten key roles. The Suns are probably a year even behind that. So with the Suns, you're talking about 3 or 4 years from now. Eric Bledsoe is 27. I want to see him in the playoffs before he's 30 or 31, especially because of how based on athleticism his game is. So I hope some team comes around and makes an offer for Bledsoe that helps the Suns build an exciting young team and helps whatever team makes the offer be a little more exciting in the playoffs. It's probably going to be like some bottom half playoff team from the East. Yeah, I don't know who it would be. I haven't really looked at possibilities, but that's the type of thing team that I think would have interest in him. One of those like 24 and 23 teams in the East that seem kind of stuck in a rut with everyone else, struggle offensively, and getting a guy like Eric Bledsoe really pushes you over the top. I'd like to see that. I think it would be good for Bledsoe and good for both teams. Just going through some of the other relevant Clipper performances, Raymond Felton had 18 points, which is great. He hit two threes, including that big three late in the fourth quarter that I mentioned earlier, but he only had one assist, which was a little interesting. You'd probably expect him to have more assists than that. The Clippers as a whole had 20 assists on 44 made field goals, and you'd probably like for a team normally to have more assists than 20 on 44 field goals, but that's how it goes sometimes, especially when you're missing Chris Paul and you've got a lot of individual offensive players. Austin Rivers struggled a little bit. He missed all four of his threes. He had, you know, he was 4 of 8 from two, so his two-point game wasn't that bad. It was just behind the arc. He missed all four of those, but he ended up with 14 points on 12 shots, and he had 4 assists, 3 steals, and only 1 turnover. So he contributed a little bit. He contributed nicely. Redick didn't have a hot night. He missed some looks that he normally makes. 2 of 7 from deep, 16 points. Again, it's a contribution, but it's not his best game. Jamal Crawford, 14 points on 5 of 11 shooting, 5 assists. That's not like, that doesn't jump out at you, right? 14 points, 5 of 11 shooting, 5 assists. But Jamal Crawford's showing that he can play again. He's showing that he can make these shots. And a lot of these plays we've seen from him in the past month or so, he'll come off of a screen and pull up from 18 feet for a shot that he's made literally probably 1,000 times in his NBA career. And he misses it. And that's worrisome. And tonight, and in the last few games in general, he's making shots that we're used to him making. I don't think it's like he's never going to have a bad game again, but if he had come out and hit 10 of 11, I would say, well, we still don't really know anything. He was obviously feeling good tonight, but this is not sustainable. But 5 of 11, this is the kind of performance that I think is sustainable for Jamal. This is who he is, or at least who he can be. These are shots that he can make. Mo Spates had not his best night offensively, 2 of 7 from the field, but he did have 9 points. Felt like he kind of missed a lot around the basket, shots that you would normally expect him to make. And he did get 7 rebounds, which is helpful because of the amount of time that the Clippers were playing without DeAndre Jordan. And then one guy who, well, I guess I'll just mention that Alan Anderson was in the rotation tonight ahead of Brandon Bass. So the Clippers actually ran a second unit of Crawford, Anderson, Wesley Johnson, Luke Mbamute, and Mo Spates, starting the three-guard lineup with Felton, Rivers, and Redick. Alan Anderson didn't do much. He missed his only three-point attempt, and it wasn't pretty. It was a bad miss, but it's just one shot in 11 minutes. He had 3 defensive rebounds, and he had 1 kind of bad defensive play where he gave up a foul because his man drove past him. Otherwise, he didn't really do much. So that's, I think, really going forward, if there's any sort of trade and you're worried about guard depth, you might as well trade Alan Anderson and sign another free agent. I just don't see what he's giving you. at best, he's giving you nothing. You know, it's when he starts hurting you that you're really going to notice him on the floor. And then the guy that I do really want to mention is Brandon Bass, who wasn't in the first half rotation, came in the second half, played 5 minutes to start the fourth quarter. That's it, 5 minutes to start the fourth quarter. You throw the ball to him 4 times. He gets 3 buckets and a pair of free throws, and he makes them both. He had 8 points in those 5 minutes, and while the Suns were trying to rally, Brandon Bass kept the game alive. It's only 8 points in a 5-minute stretch, but it's almost like this could be the Brandon Bass game. Like, you go out and you get these veterans for your deep bench, and you wonder, how much are we really getting out of this number 12 spot on the roster, spending it on a 30-year-old guy in Brandon Bass? We get a win on nights like tonight. I think this game is incredibly losable if you don't have a guy like Brandon Bass come in and make a contribution like the one that he made. So I don't know about game ball, you know, because it's hard to give game ball to a guy who he played the 11th most minutes on the team and was outscored by 6 teammates and tied. So he was tied for 7th in scoring and 11th in minutes. But because of that crucial stretch in the fourth quarter where he kind of carried the second unit offense for 4 straight possessions, he could almost get a game ball tonight. Or at least, like, if this was the NFL on Thanksgiving where they give out like the 6 turkey legs, he would get at least one of the turkey legs, I think. So Brandon Bass, I call them Brandon Bass bailouts, because there's like just a few bad possessions in a row where he got the Clippers buckets that they kind of didn't deserve. So we'll get a turkey leg for Brandon Bass. Feel good about that. Switching gears a little bit, the Clippers play again tonight on the second night of a back-to-back, and the bad news is that they have to play the Golden State Warriors tonight. I don't see a way that the Clippers can beat the Golden State Warriors in this game. And it's not often that you say that about this Clippers team. We might have said it all the time, you know, 8 years ago. But it's not often that you say it about the Clippers as currently constructed that, yeah, we don't really have a shot tonight. But I can't help but feel that way about these Warriors games, especially without Chris Paul. You know, it's hard enough with him. The team has lost plenty of games against the Warriors when they have both of their stars in Chris Paul and Blake Griffin. But when they don't have Chris, it's hard to figure where the winning comes from. But that doesn't mean the game is meaningless, because a lot of it, I think, is at least about morale, where you want to say, even if you hang with them in the first half and they go on a crazy run in the third quarter, okay, you hung with them and they went on their run, but you have something to, you have 24 minutes to build on, to see what did we do right in these 24 minutes that we can replicate. You walk away with something. But if you go down like 40-14 in the first quarter, that just crushes your spirit. Because it makes you feel like you're not really a championship contender. And every team has bad games. But when it's not really a bad game, you're just getting whooped, and it's by the same team that always whoops you, and it's a team that you're going to have to beat to get through the Western Conference playoffs, that's demoralizing. It's crushing, and it's crushed this team before, and it's one of the reasons why I was happy to see them kind of come out playing loose against the Phoenix Suns, because I was worried that there would be some morale issues following that Warriors loss. My goal is to get out of this next Warriors game without any morale issues. You know, give yourself something to build upon. You know, Zaza Pachulia is out for this game. I hope the Clippers, even if they lose the game, and like I said, I think they will lose the game, I hope that they pound it inside. That they show, we've got these guys, Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan. And while you guys up north spent all your money and time adding another superstar perimeter scorer, we kept our 2 All-NBA big men. And we're going to pound it down low against you. And I think the Clippers still lose the game, but you get big games from Chris, or I'm, excuse me, big games from Blake and DJ, and you can start talking yourself into, well, now when Chris comes back and we have a little bit closer of a fight on the perimeter, we might be able to use that down low mismatch to our advantage. We saw Blake do it a little bit. Blake was really aggressive with Draymond in the last game, and only his second game back from injury. DeAndre was not present in the last Warriors game. The Clippers need more from DeAndre. They need more from Blake, actually, than what he had, but maybe not in the same sense as they need more from DeAndre. They need more effort from DeAndre. They just need Blake to be a little sharper as he comes more back from injury and score with a little more volume. The other thing to watch for, I would say, is just defensive breakdowns, because a big part of the reason why the Clippers' last loss to the Warriors was as ugly as it was, and Blake Griffin said this in the press, was that they weren't playing their defensive schemes. They were doing things that they aren't supposed to do, and he said that shouldn't be happening at this stage in the season. And I think maybe we can chalk that up too to the mental aspect of playing the Warriors and maybe trying to do too much and forgetting yourself. I don't think that would have changed the outcome of that last game. You know, the Warriors probably did get 5 or 6 open dunks because the Clippers covered off-ball screens incorrectly. But even 12 points, you lost by 46. So you take away those 12 points. Oh, we only lost by 34. 34 is still a blowout. But maybe that's something to look for them to correct to, just to make it a little harder. Maybe, you know, it could be, maybe the last blowout is a little bit of an advantage in the sense that if you go from losing by 46 to losing by 14, you're saying, okay, we grew in the last week. We're doing something better this week than what we did last week. Whereas if you flip it, maybe it might be a little worse for morale. And then, you know, I'm hopeful that DeAndre Jordan can have a more impactful game tomorrow, because while the Clippers are playing on a second night of a back-to-back, the Warriors are actually playing on the second night of a back-to-back also. The Clippers are traveling from Phoenix to Los Angeles for that game against the Warriors. The Warriors are traveling from Oakland to Los Angeles. So it's similar, just from different directions, I guess, in terms of travel time. The Clippers, I guess, are a little further away, but I don't think it's consequential. But DeAndre Jordan didn't play minutes in this game because he was ejected. And in that sense, he might be more he should be more rested than the Clippers' other stars, but he might even be more rested than some of the Warriors' stars, who, you know, even though the Warriors won by 15, Curry, Thompson, Durant, and Draymond Green all played over 30 minutes. DeAndre Jordan only played 22. So let's hope for some fresh legs from DJ. I think that would be nice. Listen, guys, I think we're going to call that an episode. Get ready. You know, tonight's game is going to be, if you prepare yourself for the worst, it won't be as bad. You know, I wasn't really affected at all by the 46-point drubbing last weekend, because I just went in with the only thing I was looking for is, how does Blake look? And I thought that Blake looked good. So I was happy. I didn't care about the score. So I'm picking a couple things this game again. Does the defense play their scheme better? Do the big guys dominate? Not just Blake, but I want DJ to dominate too this game. And then the Clippers can lose by 15, but I'll feel good about those couple of things moving forward. If you set your expectations with, man, I really hope we pull off the upset tonight, I think we have a great chance, you're probably going to get crushed. It's probably not worth getting crushed on February 2nd. The Clippers have a unique talent of crushing our spirits in April and May. So maybe we should let them do that in April and May. And for now, take it easy a little bit. That's it for our show. We'll be back tomorrow with our last episode of the week. This is Locked On Clippers. We are here Monday through Friday with brand new episodes. You can tweet me at Lucas J. Han. You can email me lhan.clipsnation@gmail.com. You can read my articles at clipsnation.com. For now, I'm signing off.